Are you ready?
This is Combat Central with Peter Klein and G Rana on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The WWE receives backlash for backlash. The UFC brings another pay-per-view to Brazil, although they might want to avoid that from now on. We have a Calgary MMA star on the cusp of the biggest promotion on the planet, and we have two indie pro wrestling stars joining the program today. This is Combat Central on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Peter Klein and G Rana here for the next 2 hours chatting MMA, pro wrestling, whatever the hell the WWE is thinking, and boxing. And we have all of those bases covered today. Another jam-packed edition.
It's true. We always have this.
So. Yeah.
That's what makes our show better than every other show.
Yes.
Because we cover the bases.
Yes, we are the number one pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, and boxing program in the city of Calgary.
In Calgary.
Yeah.
We're local.
Take it.
Yeah.
Take that. Other things.
Some guy in his basement.
Yeah.
Actually, that's how Pat started, so I feel bad about it.
If I had a basement, I'd probably do some stuff.
Okay, yeah. Phrasing, buddy.
Yeah.
Phrasing. All right, let's get to it.
Never mind. Coming up on the show today, we have Michael Short from Dakota stopping by. We have another big boxing show this weekend with Lomachenko fighting. You know, after we come from one of the more dominant boxers in
Triple
the sport.
G.
In Triple G. By the way, I think we all... Not that... That's one to brag about when we called it. We now go to probably the most talented boxer on the planet in Vasyl Lomachenko, so we'll talk to him about that. Danny Duggan will stop by to talk about their show May 24th at Marlboro Community Hall, and we'll have part two of our conversation with Colt Cabana. Quickly, want to give a shout-out. Friday night, went to the Marlboro Community Hall, checked out some real Canadian wrestling with D'Lo Brown on the show, so shout-outs to the RCW guys there. Let's start off, as we normally do, with the news of the week. And we have to start with the big local news. Jesse Arnett getting a win last weekend. His opponent changed numerous times, including 6 days before the fight.
Yep.
But he ends up getting his second-round submission win at TKO. He retains the TKO Bantamweight Championship. He is, in my opinion, the best fighter not in a major promotion right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's 12 wins in a row.
Yeah.
He's finished most of them.
Yep.
Like, this is a guy who is ready for his shot in the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, you mentioned major promotions, and yeah, for sure.
Like, and probably the best bantamweight on the UFC.
Yeah.
There, I said it.
Yeah.
Take that, Bellator.
Yeah.
At me.
Well, I mean, Bellator, come on now. The Bellator has talent, but no.
Yeah.
Jesse Arnett is on a different level. And. Yeah. You know, ever since UFC announced they're coming back to Calgary, we've hinted at it. Well, I've hinted at it. And
this has to happen.
Has to happen.
They talked about it on the broadcast before, so we can talk about
it. Yes, yeah.
He's had offers from the UFC before.
Yeah.
Straight up. But those are at 145.
Yeah.
He's the king of 135. He wants that weight class. The time is right for him to go there. Like, he has accomplished everything you could want and then some on this level. So
and makes complete sense.
Yeah.
Hometown kid in Calgary. Why not?
Well, it was quite impressive, this performance as well. Watched it on the TV over the weekend. A skilled kickboxer, 19 years old. You don't know what you're getting. Has a Darce choke locked in for a solid minute and a half to end the first round. Kid doesn't tap, sticks with it, and gets the submission in the second round. Just a very impressive performance. We talk about the Calgary card. Looks like we got a main event.
Yes.
It's not going to be the title fight.
No,
but this is going to be a good one.
It's going to be a hell of a fight. We talked about
Eddie Alvarez, Dustin Poirier.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about it last week. It being a rumor, it's now confirmed. I love this.
Yeah.
I still, like, honestly, I was thinking, like, Poirier versus Lee, and we talked about it, like, so many weeks ago.
Yeah, but after the Gaethje fight.
Yeah, yeah. But now, no, like, this is a fantastic fight. Styles make fights, and this is going to be a hell of an entertaining fight.
Yeah, no, this is going to be a blast. So right now, at the top of this thing, you got Eddie Alvarez, Dustin Poirier, Jose Aldo, Jeremy Stephens, Ioanni and Jacek, Tisha Torres. Also, Alexis Davis is on the card against Caitlin Chukagian. Ronda Marcos against Nina Ansarov. Dustin Ortiz is fighting on this thing. Ion Cuntelaba. You have Jordan Meehan, John McDessie, who's facing Ross Pearson in a fight that's going to be awesome. Olivier Aubin-Mercier, the Canadian gangster, is going to be on this card as well. I am getting...
And plus, we got, like you mentioned, a few local kids right there.
Yes.
We got a lot of Albertan kids, and I love that.
No, and it should feature Jesse Arnett as well on this card. We're getting pretty close to this making up for it. Been a while.
It's been a while.
There's been a lot of hurt feelings around
here.
Oh,
my God.
But this is a pretty good card.
It is.
Now, if everyone could stay in bubble wrap for the next, 12 weeks?
Yeah,
we'll be good.
I was going to say that for sure. I don't want to be a downer on this by no means, because I'm so excited that we actually have something back in the city, in this city. But I hope it's not too little. They've been away for so long.
Yeah.
I almost feel like some of the fans are now just like, what's UFC? I don't care anymore. So I hope this brings back some fans. I really do, because me as a former mixed martial artist and now as a fan of mixed martial arts, I love it. I love the fact that we can talk about it, and now people should be getting excited because they're back and they are hopefully bringing a very good card.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
It looks like a good card right
hopefully,
now.
Hopefully, yes.
It's 12 fights on there. Room for a 13th with Jesse Arnett, hopefully.
Yeah.
Will we get him on the card? Hopefully we get him back on the show.
Yes.
At some point soon. Moving into the world of professional wrestling, All In Weekend in Chicago just got a whole lot more interesting as CM Punk will be doing a meet and greet at the Pro Wrestling Tees store.
I want to go to that store so bad.
Yeah, no, me too. By the way, we talk about that with Colt Cabana coming up here in a little bit. A lot of people are going to jump to conclusions about this. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of speculation around this. I don't imagine we see him in the ring at this thing.
We might see an appearance.
Yeah, this is certainly going to bring up a lot of speculation around this.
Oh,
event.
My God, as it should. And this is his first appearance in a wrestling type of environment since he left WWE. Yeah. And me as a CM Punk fan, me being an indie wrestling fan, and me being a huge fan of just the city of Chicago, love this.
Yeah.
I absolutely love this. I wish I could be there.
Oh, yeah, no, that would be...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We need to get this to be popular enough that when they do another one of these, we can go to it.
Yes. Please.
That's the goal.
Come on, boss.
Yeah. But no, this is quite intriguing.
My God. Yeah, and just the way that they have built the All-In card. I mean, you have Okada on there. You have Omega on there. Cody, obviously. Young Bucks. Marty Scurll.
Have they announced anything streaming-wise?
No. I think that might be a factor coming in the next few months, because Cody is very he's very Twitter savvy, and so he'll tell you ahead of time, hey, we got a big announcement coming up soon. So I guess the biggest thing is just follow Cody on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, and I would imagine they want to get the place sold out before they say you can stream it, you know, because you want people going there rather than just sitting at home and watching it. Also, quick news, but it's not insignificant. The Young Bucks are the first non-WWE superstars to get Funko Pops. They're coming out in July. This is, again, a big deal.
Huge
Young
deal.
Bucks, they kind of announced this on Jericho's podcast last week, which was a great interview.
Which was recorded back in January.
Yes.
So not just them, but also New Japan as well. New Japan coming out with Kenny Omega Funko Pops and Cody Funko Pops. So you can get the entire Being the Elite cast right there. All you got to do is just wait for Marty and Hangman. Yeah. But this is fantastic. And just the drive that the Young Bucks have to make that merch money, and not just merch money, but massive merch money.
Yeah.
I mean, they are venturing into... I mean, they were the ones who got into the Hot Topic, and now Chris Jericho has his shirts. By the way, have you seen Chris Jericho's new...
The new Liz Jericho, blood.
Yeah. L-I-J. Yeah. That's fantastic. But just the drive that these guys have. And they are one of the forefronts of putting indie wrestling, and not New Japan and ROH, they are considered kind of sort of indie, but they are at the forefront of putting indie wrestling as hot as it is right now. Bullet Club for sure. But Young Bucks, they have brought it to a different level. They don't need to go to the WWE.
No. They are, would still like to see them there at some point.
Yeah.
They are a big reason why you would not consider Ring of Honor and New Japan indies anymore.
Absolutely.
They're a big reason. More so Ring of Honor than New Japan.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Bullet Club put New Japan on the on the worldwide map. So.
Yes. And quickly, sticking with New Japan, Rey Mysterio Jr. is going to be at Dominion.
Yep.
This is already a pretty stacked card with, 2 out of 3 falls match, Kenny Omega against, Kazuchika Okada.
Jericho
against Naito on there as well. There's
Young Bucks moving up to, the heavyweights to fight for the titles.
This one, opponent still TBD. We have an entire Best of the Super Juniors to go before we get to Dominion.
Oh my God, right? And that starts next week, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. So I can't imagine we see him on that, but
no.
I would imagine something from that spirals off into a feud with Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, maybe that, or even what they were originally planning him versus Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah. Which but we also...
I'd be all right with any of that.
Will Ospreay called him out at the...
At the
Strong Style Evolve.
Yeah,
that's what it
was. At the Pyramid Dome. Or
moving into the WWE, Lita calling out the WWE for the Saudi Arabia situation.
Love it.
I have absolutely no problem with this, and as you can imagine, a lot of people supported her as they should.
As they should. You and I got into an argument. Well, not even an argument. We got into a heated discussion about this. Pretty much right after the Greatest Royal Rumble happened. I thought it was a massive mistake. And just the amount of media backlash that, not even media, but like just the amount of backlash. Damn it, I hate using that after that crappy pay-per-view. Just the amount of backlash that they've gotten because of this. It's like, I understand it's all about money. And they've signed 10 years with Saudi Arabia right now. But like for Lita, and good for her. Like, good for her. She's a Hall of Famer for sure. Yep. And like, I'm sure like she still is a very prominent figure within the WWE right now anyways, in terms of announcing or whatever, but like, yeah, good for her. And like, she got support from Maria Kanellis, lots of other women who are not on the roster right now, but yeah, no, I love it.
Yeah,
call them out.
No,
because
for sure.
You know what, if nobody puts you in a position to be like, all right, so maybe we should rethink this, you're just going to keep on redoing it. I know they're just going to keep on doing it because again, they've signed 10 years for this, but call them out. I love that.
For sure. And we both agreed at the time, like this, we wish this wouldn't have happened.
No.
But I genuinely do hope that the WWE is pushing for as much change there as they are saying they are. I don't think it'll have the impact they're saying it's going
to
have.
No, I mean, Saudi Arabia, like even the media outlets, they had to apologize to their fans because they showed a promo of Carmella.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
I mean, it's a bad promo, but that's not why they were
still
apologizing. Kevin Owens signing a 5-year deal, sticking with the WWE, which I mean, good for him, probably set for life type.
Yeah,
thing
and that's
now,
what he said. Like he said in a French interview at Quebec. Somewhere around there, I don't know. He said, I basically just want to retire with them.
Yeah.
He's done everything in the world, so
totally
screw it.
Pro Wrestling Insider reporting that Charlotte Flair is likely to undergo, she's had a rough little bit here.
Yeah.
She gets some teeth knocked out in Europe.
In Germany,
In Germany, yeah. I love that. I can't take a picture of my broken out.
I saw that on my Twitter feed.
And now, after this tour is done, she is going to have surgery on a ruptured implant.
Yes.
So, I'm going to suggest probably a surgery I'm never going to have to deal with, but it seems minor enough that she can work her way through it. But a little bit of a rocky road here for Charlotte Flair in the last little bit.
Yeah, that's good. Fly back to U.S. She's going to be out for a little bit.
And she has to wrestle Carmella. Also, according to Pro Wrestling Sheet, Big Cass went further than the WWE wanted to do in the segment with the little person a week ago. If that's true, then it's a good thing he wasn't on television this last week. You'll hear from guys saying, you know what, if you feel very passionately about something, just go out and do it. And like one of those, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is permission.
Yep.
In this case, probably should ask permission. And he did. And he didn't get it.
Yeah. Ask Vince himself. And Vince was like, no, damn it.
Yeah. That's when Vince is the moral compass on something, that's probably an issue.
Right.
So I wonder how this affects things with Big Cass moving forward.
Just came back, just got a massive push, which a push I don't think that he necessarily deserves because I don't think he's really that good.
No.
So
you do like him big over there, though.
Oh, my God, do they?
A couple quick notes here, too. Jessamine Duke and Marina Shafir have signed with WWE. For those of you who are wondering, they're with Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler as former MMA fighters. They formed this Four Horsewomen of MMA thing. I've seen, I think it was Bailey called them the faux horsewomen, fake in another language. If this sets up a 4-on-4, four horsewomen versus four horsewomen thing, which is kind of led by Charlotte against Ronda Rousey, sign me up.
For sure.
And I never thought I would say this, but Ronda's good enough that she could carry that thing for her side.
Yeah. I mean, Shayna Baszler's getting in there.
Yep.
You know, she's definitely improved, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now that, you know, they've signed the remaining two and they're going to be at the Performance Center. So, I mean, hey, we'll see what happens. But yeah, no, I'm totally down for this. 4-on-4, this is like a New Japan type of thing right here. You know how much they love their factions versus factions type of thing.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. I think it's going to be fantastic if it happens.
Yes, no, for sure. Either way, it opens up a lot of possibilities with Marina Shafir's husband, Roderick Strong, also working.
Yes, yeah.
I might be saying being too forward. Either way, significant other, Roderick Strong,
yeah,
is in there. Quickly, I've been saying quickly like six times now. Brandi Rhodes is out with a broken clavicle. She had surgery. It apparently went well, but that sucks. Ring of Honor announcing some CMLL talent is going to be joining them June 2nd at the Manhattan Center. Ultimo Guerrero and Titan will be working with them. And then Atlantis is joining the promotion June 15th in San Antonio and June 16th at Dallas. So Ring of Honor continues to expand their reach, this helping with their ties with New Japan Pro Wrestling, who have ties with CMLL. So the triangle has been completed here.
Yes.
And love also it. Matt Taven has gone to CMLL.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Time for us to take a break here on the program today. When we come back, there is big boxing happening this weekend as Vasyl Lomachenko is back on free television. Mm. We will chat with Michael Short from Dakota. He is Mr. Boxing in Calgary. He is Mr. Boxing for our show as well. And we will chat with him when we come back to Combat Central here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Combat Central continues with G. Rana and Peter Klein on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Combat Central continues here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. G. Rana taking this round out, off, but more than willing to carry the weight for G is a friend of the program, a regular on the show now. It is Michael Short from Dakota. Michael, they keep throwing some good boxing matches at us. You're a weekly mainstay on the show now.
Yeah, for sure. You know, boxing's alive and well, so let's get right into it. Let's talk.
Yeah, absolutely. But before we get into this week, let's put a pretty little bow on last week. We all said going into the Triple G fight last weekend, we didn't think it would last particularly long, and particularly long. And it turns out we were all right. That was quite the performance from Triple G last Saturday night.
Yeah, it was. You know, but give Marta Rosen props. I mean, he caught him with a 1-2-1 at the end of the first round that pretty much made Triple G figure, okay, time to pull the plug here. So he did get caught, you know, and of course, it's who they put in front of him, right? You know, yep. He has a little bit of say in that matter, but hey, it is what we called it, what it was going to be. And we got a chance to see Triple G again. There was a hell of a women's fight on there. So, you know, it was okay. We knew going in what we were up against.
Yeah, exactly. We were either going to see an epic upset or what we actually saw. It was exactly what Triple G needed to do. I asked last week, I will ask again, do you think a Canelo Alvarez rematch is what's next for Triple G?
Yeah, you know, of course, that's what we want to see. And if we do it in September, I think that by then the suspension should be cleared and all that stuff. So, you know, that would be a really good fight. I don't know. There's a lot of middleweights in the front right now that are, you know, really, really good quality opposition, that Spike O'Sullivan, Jermall Charlo. So there's some good action in there. You know, even throw Billy Joe in there as well if he wants to do any kind of title unification and stuff. So there's possibilities in there beyond Canelo. So whoever Triple G fights, we know it's going to be a great one. So he's never going to be in a boring match.
Yeah, absolutely. And he made it entertaining on the weekend. We talk about this weight class and, of course, Calgary fighter Albert Onilonose with particular interest in the middleweight division. Some more rankings released over the last week or so. I saw him posting on Instagram that his name keeps popping up in top 15 rankings for middleweight.
Yeah, he's now in the IBF as well. So, you know, we like working with the WBO. We've got a very good strong relationship with them. IBF rankings, of course, hey, we'll take it. You know what? He won a major title, and he got the right promoter behind him, and now he's getting into those rankings. He's getting noticed, and we're going to see big stuff coming for Albert. He's one step away from a world championship, and we're talking big money. So, you know, let's see what Albert can do and bring something to the West again. So let's see.
Now, moving on to this weekend, as I mentioned before, they keep giving us good fights to watch. We got Lomachenko back on tap this weekend. He's fighting Linares. What do you make of this bout?
Well, first off, let me tell you, if you don't know who Lomachenko is, they call him the Matrix, and it's because he defies gravity. You know, he's out there doing stuff that is just not usually seen in boxing. I mean, he takes great, great fighters and he makes them look ordinary. He picks them apart, and this guy is just something special. However, he is stepping up quite a bit in weight now. He's going into the 135 category. And we just think that, what do you call it? Sometimes when these guys go up and wait and keep going up, you never know what you're going to get, right? Mm-hmm. So that being said, he makes great fighters look ordinary. And let me tell you, though, he's bit off a lot when he comes to Linares, because Linares has got mad skills. He's a big, tall guy. He'll probably be a head taller than Lomachenko. He's got fast hands. He puts punches together well. So it's going to be a hell of a fight.
Yeah, Lomachenko is one of those ones where I kind of wonder why he isn't a bigger name. And the record isn't as impressive as some of the other ones that you see, but he isn't just facing tomato cans every time out. Like, this is a very well-earned 10-1 record.
Oh, Lomachenko, let me tell you, he wants just only the great fights. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, he only wants the best people. Like, he wants to challenge himself. He's done stuff. Obviously, two different world titles in two different weight categories in, what, 6 or 7 fights? I mean, that was crazy. That'll probably never be duplicated. He defeated another 2-time gold medalist in Regan Diao and made him look ordinary, and in fact, made him quit. I think the last time he struggled in a fight was his third fight against Gary Russell. And, we do know that he injured his left hand in that fight. And then that's when they brought in a proper hand wrapping guy, Russ Amber. And ever since then, everybody quits. Everybody's TKO'd. So he's, who knows? It's hard to bet against him.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you put up his talent, like, I would take his talent over almost anyone else in boxing right now. He is that good. And I think a lot of people in that last fight were more on the lines of, oh, man, look how bad Rigondeaux was. But it's like, no. That's just how good Lomachenko can be. How much of an effect do you think moving up in weight has on this fight tonight?
Well, it's going to have a lot, right? Because, Linares is a pretty... a good fighter at his weight, and he cuts down to 135. Lomachenko, started off at, 122 going into featherweight. Now he's super featherweight. Now he's moving into lightweight. So every time you move up in those small categories and you move up even 3, 4, 5 pounds, it makes a tremendous impact, like we saw in Chocolatito last year. So it will have. I mean, eventually he's going to run out, but I just think that he's probably got enough to defeat Linares this time, but, it's a hell of a fight. It's worth the price of admission for sure. And I do believe he is going into the main arena at Madison Square Garden, so that is a huge step up for Lomachenko. When he's been on his own before as a main event, he's only been in the theater, which is much smaller. And I believe this fight is in the main arena, so that's humongous. If they can sell Madison Square Garden, these two guys, that's a huge step up.
It's also a fight that's on free television again in the States. It's not HBO. It's not Showtime. It's another venture on ESPN. I know we talk about this a lot, that there was another boxing deal made this week with DAZN spending like $1 billion to bring boxing. But how important is it to get this face on free TV on a channel that everyone is familiar with right now with ESPN?
Hey, that's what's going to build them, right? So, the more people that see him, then they start to tune into this guy. A lot of MMA guys know who Lomachenko is. And if he can start to transcend the sport and start to attract, the soccer mom, the hockey mom, then that's what's going to make him an all-star, and it's going to make him a household name. Then he'll command those mega, mega events. Think back to when Floyd Mayweather started to really command the pay-per-view, right, as the A-side. It wasn't until after, Gatti and then De La Hoya. So around that time is when... he started to really command the pay-per-view. So, and he already had quite a few fights at that point, already won world titles. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. I think all the exposure that he can get, the better for him and the better for the sport, really. One last thing on the weight situation. You've trained fighters in a number of different situations. You've been in fights in a number of different situations. When it comes to moving up a weight class and moving up in weight the way that Lomachenko is for this fight, does that alter how he trains at all? Does that change a training camp up at all?
Yeah, it's definitely going to, he's going to have to put the weight on slowly. Doesn't want to just blow it up. And, sometimes a guy that size and that talented, he just might not cut weight. It might come down to something like that with a guy like Lomachenko. He might just decide not to cut down to 130 and just walk around at whatever he weighs in at. So it's definitely, He doesn't want to lose his skills, which is his elusiveness, his movement, and his speed. So that's something he doesn't want to affect. But, you know, going against Linares, I think he's going to have to put on a little bit more punching power. And, you know, he's going to have some weight behind him. So he's going to have some actual physical, you know, athletic weight. So we'll see what happens when they weigh in. But I suspect that he'll come in right on the nose, maybe a pound under or so. But Linares should be right around there, too.
Now, it's going to be a good fight. It's going to be a very, very entertaining fight. Can I get you on the record with a prediction for this bout?
Yeah, you know, it's a great fight to have. It's hard to go against Lomachenko at this stage. I'd probably have to say Lomachenko. I think it's going to be a war, though. And, you know, one thing I want to point out, Linares has, what, 46 fights, 47 fights, something like that. When he did lose, though, he got stopped twice early and once late. So maybe his chin is not as good as he'd like it to be. But I would probably say it goes the distance, 12 rounds. I'm going to say that Lomachenko should probably win. And it's hard to go against him at this stage right now until he actually gets his butt handed to him. So,
yeah, no, I'm in the camp that the next fight that he loses is the one that I'm going to be wrong on predicting, because I'm not picking him to lose until further notice, for sure. A couple more local notes before we let you go. Local fighter Jesse Arnett back in the MMA side, picking up a victory in the MMA world again last weekend. I know he's still someone that you guys are looking at closely and working with closely. What did you make of Jesse Arnett's performance over the weekend?
Yeah, you know, his opponent got switched up a bunch of times, and Jesse is a true professional. He's a world-class athlete, and he knows the mental game of sports, and he just shuffled the deck and just approached it the way that he would anybody else. So, and he got the job done. You know, he had a little bit of struggle in the fight, but, you know, that's just part of it, right?
Yeah.
And he's on a roll. I mean, Jesse, he's reached the top of his category right now, so I think it's time to move him up and put him into the higher level. So if he can get a job with one of the big shows like UFC or something like that, you know, let's see what he can do. There's another local fighter here, Hakeem, that made it into the UFC and didn't go so well. But Jesse, you know, give him a shot, see what he wants to do. But yeah. He's on a roll, for sure. He's on a roll.
Yeah, no, he is on quite the roll, and I think a lot of people would be happy if he was on a certain big MMA card that is coming to Calgary in July, but we'll wait to see if anything moves on that one. And lastly, May 26th is creeping closer and closer. How are things shaping up before the big fight at Grey Eagle Resort and Casino?
Yeah, we've had a few names change, you know, with the opponents coming in and stuff, people backing out, of course. That's just part of how it goes with promoting boxing. And, you know, we've got the card all set. We've got a couple opening amateur K-1-style kickboxing matches, but these are very seasoned fighters. And we've got one pro-style kickboxing match featuring local fighter Peter Arbeau. And Peter Arbeau is going to be somebody to keep an eye on. This guy's got, you know, really good skills. He's got good charm, looks, and he brings it. He's, you know, quite the gentleman to work with. Two female bouts on this. Now, the females want to fight. Hey, we're going to give them a chance to fight. So this is going to be an exciting show. And, of course, local fighter Devin Reddy, 9-0, and he's going for double-digit number of wins. And let's see if we can do it. I mean, he's in tough. And, you know, he's adjusted his training camp for this opponent, but he's known about it for, what, 2 months now, who he's fighting, and I think it's going to be great. Gwyn Lewis, he's taken on Wayne Smith now out of Saskatoon, and Wayne Smith has got a lot of knockdowns in his fights. And Gwyn, he's the only fighter in recent times that's got 8 knockdowns in 2 fights. So he's,
wow.
they started nicknaming him. We started off as calling him the Hurricane, but I think we're calling him Manitos de Piedras, and it stands for Little Hands of Stone.
I like that. I think that can catch on. I like that.
He's got a Colombian side to him, Colombian Welsh, and so that's where the, I think that bravado, that Latino bravado comes out when he fights, and this guy, yeah, if you've ever seen the Tasmanian Devil, this is Gwyn Lewis, so.
Nice. Well, again, looking forward to it. And I keep saying we'll have you on leading up to it. We are now leading up to it, but I'm sure we'll have you on the eve of the show, and enjoy the fights this weekend.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, man.
So there is Michael Short from Dakota. Time for us to take a break here on the program. Still a lot to get to on the show when we come back. We're doing some UFC previewing. There is a pay-per-view tonight. Amanda Nunes on the top of the card against Raquel Pennington and a couple legends duking it out. We will talk about that and a lot more still to come here on Combat Central on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now, an in-depth fight preview with Peter and G on Combat Central on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Ultimate Fighting Championship is back in Brazil for UFC 224 later on tonight on pay-per-view. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Peter Klein. He is G Rana. We do want to start off by, I mean, we have to touch on this one before we get going into the in-depth fight analysis that we will be providing. A number of UFC officials were robbed at gunpoint Thursday night in Brazil. You hear from a lot of fighters saying that you don't really go too far off the beaten path when you're visiting Brazil for a fight. It sounds like they weren't that far off the beaten path. They were by their hotel, but a very scary situation. Luckily, it sounds like everyone came out about as well as you can from being robbed at gunpoint.
Yeah.
First of all, no fighters involved. Not that that makes this any better, but a number of officials, a number of managers were robbed. So a rough situation to start the weekend in Brazil for members of the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
You ever been to Brazil?
No.
I've been there once.
Yeah?
It was for jiu-jitsu.
Okay. I heard that's popular out there.
Oh, yeah. My trainer, Janda Ribeiro. Shout out, Janda, even though you're in San Diego right now.
Guys, listen.
Yeah. He brought me out there one time, and it was nice, the fact that I was around people of Brazilian, my team, my camp was Brazilian, so that was nice. But yeah, they always told me, as a foreigner, don't do anything that kind of sticks out, or as you mentioned, venture out on the beaten path. But yeah, no, it's hit or miss.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a cool place, but I'm pretty okay.
Weather's fantastic.
Oh,
my
yeah.
God.
There's a lot of places where the weather's fantastic where you won't get robbed at gunpoint if you go a street too far.
Absolutely.
So it seems like a nice place, but I'm pretty good just watching it in like documentaries and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But we do have a number of fights that'll be going down there. We'll get to the big news from the weigh-ins coming up here in a little bit, but we'll start from the top and work our way down. The main event on this card, the Women's Bantamweight Championship on the line. Amanda Nunes defends her title against Raquel Pennington. Nunes is on another level right now with wins in 6 in a row for Amanda Nunes. That win streak starting with a victory over noted professional wrestler Shayna Baszler at UFC Fight Night in March 2015. She then beats Sarah McMahon, Valentina Shevchenko, Misha Tate for the UFC's Bantamweight Championship, Ronda Rousey, and then Valentina Shevchenko pretty impressive winning streak here. If she wins this, it feels like the next bout is against Chris Cyborg. For Raquel Pennington, she has a 4-fight winning streak, although you may not remember that because she hasn't fought since November of 2016. It's a long layoff. She has waited for this night. I don't particularly think it's going to go well for her.
No, I really don't. I mean, yeah, she lost to Holly Holm, and after that, you know, as you mentioned, 4 fights in a row. But Nunes is a completely different beast.
Yes.
And I've said it before on the show. No, like, I never want to say, oh, this is an easy fight or this is just a warm up fight. A fight is a fight. Anything can happen. But for me, this is almost a checkpoint.
Yeah.
To Cyborg.
This is a you need a fight before you get to Cyborg because she just had a fight.
Yeah. We're in Brazil. We need to, you know.
Yep.
Throw a title fight in there.
Yeah. So here, go get a win in your home country.
Yeah.
And then we'll have Cyborg at ringside.
Yep.
Now, I am well aware I am underestimating Raquel Pennington.
Sure. And I think everybody is.
I have for a while. Yeah. I didn't think she would beat Misha Tate. I was fairly confident she beat Elizabeth Phillips, but I didn't have her against Bench Kohea, and I didn't have her against Jessica Andrade.
Yep.
So I am well aware that I am underestimating her, but I just feel like this is one of those fights where I feel like Amanda Nunes is just a better version of Raquel Pennington.
Oh, absolutely.
And I just, yeah.
There are more tools in the tool belt for Amanda Nunes.
Yeah. They may, yeah, and like better tools as well. Like it's, it is... it doesn't look great on paper for Raquel Pennington.
No, and Amanda Nunes, her stand-up game is just something unreal.
Yeah.
It's, and this is why, like, I'm so excited for Nunes versus Cyborg. Again, we are totally, totally underestimating Pennington right here, but I got to talk about it. Like, that's going to be such an exciting fight to watch.
Yeah.
Nunes versus Cyborg.
Credit to Nunes for getting herself to a point where if she wins that fight, she might be considered the best women's fighter of all time.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Like, it's, that would be.
Did you hear about what Cyborg wants to do next summer, 2019? She wants to venture out in boxing.
Boxing, yeah. Yes. Yeah, she has two more fights on her UFC deal, which, I mean, tells me that the picking's right right now, because we've seen how many times has someone been looking into another venture, then they get their ass kicked.
Yes.
And I get, like, she is.
Or they get their ass kicked, and then they move on to a different venture. Yeah, but I'm talking about you, Ronda Rousey.
You wonder how much the head is in it for some people. Sure, definitely. Who are like, oh, yeah, I'll retire in five fights. And, well, you should probably retire now, then, because you're not as focused as the person you're stepping in the cage with. But, no, I think if Nunes wins this fight and then goes on to beat Cyborg, we are talking about one, like, then that is wins over Miesha Tate, Ronda Rousey, Sarah McMahon, and Cyborg.
Yeah.
Like, that is. We're getting into Mount Rushmore territory.
Totally.
So this is a big stretch coming up for Amanda Nunes, but she needs to get past this task of Raquel Pennington. I believe she will do so, and I believe it'll come within the distance. I think she's finishing this fight.
Yeah.
I'll say second round.
I'll say third or fourth.
Okay. Yeah. In the co-main event, we have Jacare Souza going one-on-one with Kelvin Gastelum. This is a fantastic fight.
Sign me up. But
Jacare coming off a win over Derek Brunson after falling to Robert Whittaker, while Kelvin Gastelum has already won this weekend as he beat the scales, making weight. He is coming off of a win over Michael Bisping before that, he lost to Chris Weidman, had a win over Vitor Belfort, called back because he likes to smoke, and we also have wins over Tim Kennedy and Johnny Hendricks. This one, it's pretty simple. Kelvin Gastelum wants to keep it standing. Jacare wants it on the ground.
And you know what? Even if they keep it standing, we've seen Jacare knock people out.
Yep.
His head kick, oh my God. So, this, like, sign me up for this fight for sure. But this is basically, Kelvin Gastelum, fantastic fighter. There's a reason why he is in the UFC. There's a reason why he has won so many fights. But this, to me, is like giving raw meat to an alligator.
Okay.
Because Jacare is an alligator.
Yes.
And no matter what Gastelum has in store, Jacare is just, we mentioned, you know, the championship fight. Nunes is just a better version of Pennington. Jacare is one of the best fighters on the face of the planet. He is just simply better than Kelvin Gastelum in all facets.
All facets?
All facets. I'm talking about wrestling as well.
Okay. See, that's, this is one of those ones where I think Gastelum, high school wrestling champion, he needs to use that wrestling to keep this fight standing.
Sure.
Now, Jacare is one of like six people on this planet who I would tell to pull guard. I think pulling guard in 2018 is a moronic move for most, but for him, go for it.
Him, Damian Maia, like a few others.
And that's honestly probably it. Brian Ortega could probably pull it off too.
Yeah. I would say Tals Lytus, he's also fighting, but he's not. No, he's not.
Even him, like, you don't want to be on your back in MMA in 2018. No. Unless you're Jacare, then you're fine.
Yeah.
But to me, I think Gastelum still has the edge on the feet with the boxing. Like, I feel like his boxing is where he is going to have the advantage here. The problem is Souza can handle or can hang with Gastelum on the feet. Gastelum can't hang with Jacare on the ground. And this is another one. More tools in the toolbox, more check marks on the side of Jacare. I'm going with him. He's going to get a submission at some point here. I'm saying second round for this one as well.
He finishes the fight, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think he can do it on the feet, and I also think he can do it on the ground, obviously. But I think he finishes this fight.
This is a big fight for Gastelum, too, because
absolutely.
He is right on the verge of proving he is a top fighter in the UFC. Like, he is someone who the only thing that's been holding him back has been the weight scale.
Sure.
And now he's moved up in weight. I still think he's better at 175 or at 170. Oh, I mean, he's fought at 175 because homie can't make weight. But he's better at 170, but he's good at 185. I just don't know if he's on this level.
No.
But we'll see. Like, this is a huge fight for Kelvin Gastelum and for Jacare. A win here, I have no problem with him getting the next title shot at middleweight.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, he's one of the best fighters in the face of the planet. Middleweight is the most stacked division in the UFC right now.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why Jacare is near the top.
Moving on to the next bout, it is supposed to be in the women's strawweight division. Amanda Bobby Cooper apparently didn't get the memo that we're moving up a weight class.
Yeah.
Mackenzie Dern is facing Amanda Cooper.
Yeah.
Mackenzie Dern is one of the top prospects in mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. She is a tremendous grappler, has won more jiu-jitsu medals than I could possibly count, but she has missed weight three times now.
Yes.
And this one wasn't close, as she weighs in 7.5 pounds over the weight limit. I was willing to give her the benefit of the doubt because I didn't know about the situation with the people getting robbed at gunpoint, but it turns out she wasn't in that. There is no excuse for missing weight here. Absolutely, positively, no excuse for missing weight by 7.5 pounds.
We've talked about it so many times about how it's frustrating as a fight fan to see these fights when one athlete has, you know, gone over the scale and they just don't make weight. You know, Lee, we saw him a few weeks ago not make weight, but he still won. I can understand 1 or 2 pounds.
Yeah.
I can understand that because I know, like, you hate it. And trust me, I do as well. If you can't make weight, you can't make weight. I understand that. But I've seen people and I've trained with people who literally kill themselves to try and make that weight.
Yeah.
And they're only like, they're only 1 or 2 or 2.5 pounds over because they don't have anything to give.
Yeah.
I can get over that because I've seen it and it sucks.
Yeah.
Watching your teammate just whittle away and they can't make weight. And then following that, just their mental psyche takes them out of the fight, all this. But you mentioned 7 pounds.
Seven pounds.
You're not even trying at this point.
No, that's almost another weight class.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The next weight class is 125. You're right there.
Yeah.
You have comfortably made 125.
7 pounds. There is no excuse for this whatsoever.
No. And I don't want to hear about, I don't want to hear about travel. I don't want to hear about any of this. Everyone else made weight.
Yeah. Again, Kevin Gastelum made weight.
Yes.
Come on. I mean, again, you're not even trying. And this, like, that pisses me off so much because, again, from my experience, I've seen it. Like, you can't make weight. You can't make weight by 2-3 pounds. That's okay, in my opinion, because it kills me. It kills me as a teammate, and then it also kills them because, you know, it just takes them out of everything. But 7 pounds, give me a break.
But, again, like, there's no reason for her not to do it. You know, like, there's no repercussions.
Yeah,
she's still going to get the fight. She loses. She's going to lose a pretty decent chunk of change.
Yeah, yeah.
But then she just takes another fight.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen, like, people who have missed weight get title fights immediately after.
Absolutely.
There needs to be more repercussions.
Yeah.
And credit Amanda Bobby Cooper for stepping in here and taking the fight. Like, she's traveled all the way to Brazil. She's made the weight she wants to fight.
Yep.
We have seen, I think it's now 10-1 in their last 11 fighters who have missed weight.
Yep.
Because they're not draining their bodies the same way, there is a significant advantage to this now,
100%.
Especially when it's 7.
Yep.
When you miss weight by a couple pounds, the thought would be, well, they've put everything they can, it'll be completely drained. This, you're not drained at all.
No. No, again, you can comfortably make 125. It's infuriating. Yeah. Like, oh, what do you do? You're not even trying.
No.
Like,
and at this point, like,
God. Move up. Just move up and wait.
Yeah, I hate it. I'm taking her in the fight.
Yeah.
She's not drained.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
She's going to be the bigger fighter in this fight.
Yeah.
I also think she's more talented.
Yeah,
fair. I have her getting the win in this bout, which would drop Cooper to 3-4, which is a tough spot to be in the UFC. Mm. But, it, like, again, with so much on the line, like, this, if Amanda Cooper loses this fight, she could get cut.
Yeah.
And her opponent now isn't making weight. So now she has the decision to make of if she wants to still take this fight against someone who hasn't put in the same work as her, but she still faces the same career repercussions as Mackenzie Dern. And it's awesome that she's getting 20% of like the 20 grand that Mackenzie Dern makes for this fight. I don't think it's worth it. I wouldn't, if I were her, and I don't have the fighter mentality, I wouldn't take this fight.
Yeah.
I say, give me my show money, give me my win money, and let me get the hell out of here.
Totally. Totally. But again, just wants a fight.
Yeah.
I respect that and I understand that. So
we are up against it. John Lineker taking on Brian Kelleher in what should be a pretty fun fight. I go Lineker in that bout. And Vitor Belfort versus Leonardo Machida in a fight where I believe the loser is now a reserve in the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix.
Yeah.
It's
a fight between two geriatrics right here.
I don't care who wins this fight at all.
By the way, hold on. I know you don't care. Neither do I. But it was so funny. I saw it on Twitter before and after. Not even a before or after, but like it was a side-by-side of Vitor Belfort when he was on TRT and now, and it's just like,
yeah,
whoa, somebody really poked a balloon right there, and it just deflated.
Other names of note from this card, you mentioned Talis Laitis is fighting on the Fight Pass prelims against Jack Hermanson, an interesting name at middleweight. You have Alexei Olenek fighting in the heavyweight division against Junior Albini. That should be a fun fight as well. And,
no relation to Kelly Olenek.
Probably not. Nope. So that's going to do it for UFC 224. The next offering from the Octagon comes next weekend with Ultimate Fight Night in Chile, as Damian Maia is going to be taking on Kamaru Usman.
Ooh,
so that should be a pretty fun fight. The next time the UFC is on pay-per-view is June 9th in Chicago with Robert Whittaker taking on Yoel Romero, Rafael Dos Anjos against Colby Covington, and Alistair Overeem against Curtis Blaydes, along with CM Punk against Mike Jackson. So that's going to do it for our UFC breakdown today. Time for us to take a break here on the show. When we come back, it's going to be an interesting discussion. We talk WWE, the week that was. When we come back to Combat Central on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Rusev Udria! Rusev Machka!
Combat Central continues with G. Rana and Peter Klein on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Oh! Machka kick! Rusev! Is he going to Money in the Bank? Yes, he is!
Welcome back, everyone. One of the biggest surprises of the week comes at the very end of the WWE week as Rusev is off to Money in the Bank. Peter Klein and G. Rana with you, continuing our conversation here today on Combat Central.
What a hell of an intro.
Right?
Every day is Rusev Day.
Yes.
Machka kick! That's all I wanted to say right there.
All right. Well, glad you got that in.
Yeah.
A legitimate surprise from SmackDown this week as Rusev beats Daniel Bryan to get into Money in the Bank.
And you know what? The amount of crap that I saw on WWE this week, a lot of people were saying like that was a bad decision. I thought it was a decent decision because to me, Daniel Bryan is such a megastar. He should not be relegated. Not even relegated, but he should not be competing for a Money in the Bank thing.
Yeah.
He should already be competing for a title, in my opinion.
Also, you don't need to see him in a ladder match right now.
With those injuries?
I don't need to see a guy who has been dealing with concussion problems for the last his entire life be in a ladder match.
Yeah. My only critique with this, though, is they still have yet to pull the trigger on Rusev being a face.
Because
they're treating him like a heel.
Yeah.
And he's getting the third biggest face reaction on the roster.
Yeah. But this was a great match.
Fantastic.
We're going to cover a lot with the WWE this week. But I really like the qualifying matches. You have Rusev, Miz, Finn Balor, and Braun Strowman qualifying for Men's Money in the Bank. I like the qualifying matches because, again, and this is something I harp on, stakes involved. Something was on the line.
Absolutely. And it furthers a storyline because we harp on it all the time. Like, what we talk about it every time that we analyze pay-per-view or whatever, you know, how did we get here? And it's not always the best, but this way it makes sense and it brings me in as a viewer. I enjoy it. There's been rumors that there might be a third Money in the Bank thing, tag thing.
I've read some places that say it's absolutely happening, and I've read places that says it's absolutely not happening.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll let it play out. We did see tag teams mentioned use the promos. In
AOP
the
did a promo. I think Sheamus and Cesaro did a promo as well. So
we saw them do the little handheld thing. But,
yeah, which to me is still ridiculous.
I don't mind the handheld thing. I don't like the lighters.
The lighters, but like the handheld thing, like we talk about it all the time. You are WWE. You have the best production crew in all of wrestling. Maybe utilize that.
Yeah.
You know?
With the four that are in there right now, Rusev, Miz, Finn Balor, and Braun Strowman, I'd be fine with all four of them winning it. Mm-hmm. Braun probably less than the others because I don't necessarily think he needs it.
That would be a weird dynamic.
But obviously, Miz has been great with it before. Oof. Rusev would be awesome with it. Oof. Finn Balor, I think, would be good as well. Yeah. So I like the way this is going.
Yeah. I rarely say that, but yes.
On the women's side, Ember Moon and Charlotte are your Money in the Bank qualifiers. That Ember Moon triple threat match with her, Ruby Riott, and Sasha was excellent.
Good.
Was really, really good. And I'm more and more convinced that there is a star in Ember Moon. No pun intended. A little bit of a pun intended.
Yes. No, I agree. She is a phenomenal athlete, and I think she definitely came into her own near the end of her NXT tenure, because she basically was just like, yeah, I'm the locker room leader. I'm going to take this and put it on my back, and that's where I think we saw the beginnings of this character.
Yeah.
She's great.
No, she is. She's really good. Charlotte being in there is interesting. Again,
like that's another name where it's just like, I don't necessarily think that she needs it.
No,
at all, really.
It would be interesting for her to win it and then cash it in on Carmella and kind of balance that off a little
bit. The one thing I didn't like, Becky Lynch, man.
Yeah, I wonder if they're setting her up for a heel turn here, because the heel side on SmackDown on the women's division right now is not the strongest.
I mean, you have the Iconics or whatever the hell they're calling them these days. I did not have a stutter. I'm just making fun of that name. I could see Becky being a prominent heel. I just want to see her in a prominent role because she is a phenomenal performer.
Right.
One of the best women's wrestlers that they have.
Yeah. No, for sure. But yeah, the heel side for the women's division on SmackDown right now is very much lacking. All of this comes after a really, 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 really bad backlash card. We had one match end with a literal kick in the nuts, and then the show ended with a metaphorical one. The first match was great.
That was the only thing.
The Miz versus Seth Rollins was fantastic. The rest of this show was terrible. I was watching this with a couple friends on Sunday night.
Really hope you read some novels, because that was the only way that you can probably get through that.
I apologized to them after for saying, yeah, no, I think this one's going to be actually not bad. And then I said after to my my fiance, we were walking back from where we were for watching this, and I said, honestly, if we weren't doing the show, this would be the time where we're like, okay, need a break. Because that was horrible. The matches weren't great. The stories were terrible. Like, it was... What, like, I'm imagining when we do our best and worst of the years, this one's coming up a lot in the ladder. This was terrible.
I was so angry because you know how busy of a person I am.
Yeah.
I rarely have time to actually sit down and watch something. Finally found some time on Sunday night.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, this is weird. I'm not working.
Yeah.
I'm not doing other things. I might just end up watching this. I was so angry that I had to spend some of my rare free time watching that crap.
Yeah.
And I understand, like, Meltzer even said it on Twitter. Like, somebody asked him, what were they thinking? Meltzer said, it's an experiment. Well, that experiment definitely blew up, and it blew up hard.
Yeah.
You mentioned the one match, Seth Rollins versus The Miz. That was the only thing that was good about this.
You know what bugged me is that where I was watching, because I worked at 6:60 until 6 o'clock, then walked to the place where I was watching it. So I came into that match halfway through. So I only got half of the best thing on the show.
Yeah. It basically just further solidified that Seth Rollins and The Miz are the MVPs of their respective brands.
Yeah.
I don't even think AJ is the MVP, because after that match, I was just like, that right there, that match, Shinsuke versus AJ. Remember after Money in the Bank, after the Royal Rumble, how excited people were? Like, dude, we're finally getting it. AJ versus Shinsuke. Who would have thought that they screwed up this entire feud via kicks to the balls? That's the only thing that they have going for them is, hey, who can kick whoever? Let's play Rochambeau.
Yeah.
And this is it. And like,
For the story they're trying to tell with AJ and Shinsuke, I like that to me isn't the most egregious thing on this card. Like,
No.
I don't mind how that ends. It's like, okay, that makes sense. What I don't like is you making that a no disqualification match and then ending it in a no contest. It's like,
sure. Okay, so I don't like that. And I also don't like the placement of that match. I understand. Like, believe me, I get it. You know, it's your big dog.
I'm not even going to argue the big dog thing.
You want to do that. But like, I also understand just the way that Shinsuke versus AJ ended. Maybe you don't want to put that as your main event. And I understand that part as well. But right. I'm under the, like, I'm kind of old school in the sense that if you have a heavyweight or if you have a championship title, one of your top championship titles on the card, maybe it should close out the show.
Yeah.
The only time where I don't think that it should close out your show, we saw this in NXT versus Gargano versus Ciampa. The only time where it shouldn't close out the show is if you have a hot, hot feud.
Yeah.
Get what I'm saying? Yeah.
No, for sure.
And the way, yeah, no. And the way that this freaking pay-per-view ended, Samoa Joe versus Roman Reigns, that's not a hot, hot feud.
It had been built up fairly well, and I was intrigued to see that match, but that match sucked.
Garbage.
And, like, for the feud that they are building, where, like, Samoa Joe is cutting good promos, Roman Reigns is cutting decent promos on him. Like, Samoa Joe is building this up as, like, a big, like, I'm going to end you. Like, he basically, in a roundabout set way, said he was going to kill Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
And then for that match to have as little fire as it had, like, that was...
It started off pretty decent.
It did, and then it slowly worked. Like, I don't think we needed 5 minutes of rear chin locks in that match.
No, absolutely not. And
yeah, it was a bad match.
And again... Like, people were walking out, and it's just like, the match itself... Like, the show ran longer than it should have, and I immediately saw Ryan Satin tweet out a GIF of Vince McMahon when he did his stupid XFL announcement. People shouldn't be subjugated to laborious 3 hours of sports.
Yeah.
You know, nobody can handle it. Well, Vince, Raw is 3 hours.
Yeah.
This was more than 3 hours.
To be fair, the quote is 3.5 hours, but yes.
Sure.
But this was a 3.5 hour show as well. This was... The matches were bad. It didn't really further anything along.
Remember last year when everybody was saying that backlash was terrible when Jinder won the title?
Yeah.
That one makes this one look like Wrestle Kingdom versus Backlash.
Like the Nia Jax against Alexa Bliss match. It was
that promo.
It was fine for what it was. Yeah, don't do that promo right after a match. That can be
Nia is not a good promo.
She's
not a good promo, and she's not good at talking because I've heard her do commentary, and I'd rather hear Stephanie McMahon do commentary when she did the over the like the battle whatever it was
Royal Rumble.
Yes,
that little thing. Yeah. But yeah, no, like that is if you're going to do that promo, don't have it when she's exhausted after a match pre-tape the next night. Jeff Hardy defeats Randy Orton again. Like this is one. Wade Keller had a good. Way of describing this on Stone Cold's podcast this week, he said, where he just, like, on the fast forward thing, if you put it up to, like, two times, this is a good match.
Yeah.
But, didn't. Even Daniel Bryan against Big Cass, like, it's a match that never got going. Carmella against Charlotte, like, it was fine, but too clunky for me to really get into. AJ against Shinsuke, they're just not clicking the same way they have clicked before. Like, say what you want, storyline-wise and all that, and it hasn't been a great storyline. I don't hate the finish as much as other people just because that's the story you're telling. But overall, the first 21 minutes of this match before they both punted each other in the nether regions.
It was decent.
It was okay.
I mean, I thought it was better than what they did at Mania.
It was better than Mania, not as good as Greatest Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was their silver medal. Really bronze, because Wrestle Kingdom is better than anything they've done here so far.
Right?
The chair spot that almost killed AJ.
That
was
like,
funny.
Okay, I saw that, and immediately my Twitter just kind of blew up with GIFs, and it was just like the funniest thing in the world to me, because AJ just throws it, Nakamura sells it, and then it just smashes right into AJ's face. Oh.
And then the tag team match, Braun and Bobby Lashley against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn.
What the hell was that?
That was terrible, too. Like, it was just... again, like I don't want to go like too hard on the talents because Lord knows they're working hard and it's not something I could do and yada 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 yada. This was an off night for everyone. The matches sucked. The storytelling and the storylines sucked. This was a bad, bad, bad wrestling show.
This was probably the worst pay per view that I've seen from WWE since.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. Yeah. I don't know, but like, yeah. And then we saw it on Raw. Man, what the hell was that Bobby Lashley thing?
I have that written down here. I hated that.
Okay.
Hated that.
Okay, so
because when I saw a sit down interview with Bobby Lashley, it's like, okay, we need this. Like, we need to know why this guy came back, what direction he needs to go in.
But
what the hell?
Definitely. And that sit down interview, that should have happened, I think, right after Mania. Or
the week after the night after Mania.
Yes, yeah. Not, you know, after a crappy pay-per-view like this, where, like, I don't know what they're doing with him, man. And you've talked about it before, about his stint in TNA and how he became, like, a better talker, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's the scripted promos. I don't know.
He's also a heel.
Also a heel.
It's a lot easier being a jerk than it is to be a nice dude.
Trust me, I know. I'm a living proof of that. But, Yeah, no, like, he's talking about his sisters and, like, them beating him up and then, like, oh, I love you and, you know, I love my sister too. But, like, that was a weird, weird story, and I don't know what they're doing with him. I thought that they had major, major plans for him.
Yeah.
Now, who knows? Who knows?
The thing is, TNA did the sit-down interview with him a couple months before he left.
Yeah.
And did it better than this. And which should concern WWE. Like, this right? this was not good at all. It makes me want to see Bobby Lashley less. And I am quickly getting to the point where I don't care about Bobby Lashley.
And we should never really say that because he is a fantastic performer.
Yeah.
And from all accounts, as you mentioned, you know, he's a good talker as a heel. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. It's very early right now, and I don't give WWE the benefit of the doubt a lot of times when it comes to their character development.
Yeah.
But this one, I can kind of sort of get in because he just got there, right?
Yep.
It's not like he's been there for 2 or 3 years and it's just like, oh, well, you know, let's wait and see what happens with him. I hope that they have something big in store. But if this is what we're getting, I'm turning it off.
Yeah. A couple positives. I'm really digging Dolph and Drew.
Oof.
Someone pointed it out on Twitter and I can't not see it now, comparing them to early days of Shawn Michaels and Diesel.
Yeah.
Like when Diesel first came out as a bodyguard, And I can't not see that now.
That was like an immediate comparison when Drew came back the night after Mania or whatever it was. I love it. And the crowd basically, like when they went against Heath Slater, like the crowd chanting 3MB, but Drew selling it like it never happened.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
No, Drew is such a good heel.
Oh, he's so good.
Fantastic. And him, like,
he looks like someone I want to hate.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, he's jacked.
Yeah.
He scowls.
A lot of 3MB. Well, two of the three members of 3MB are kind of like that.
Yeah.
You know, Heath, he's got kids.
First ever SmackDown Tag Team Champion, Heath Slater.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of SmackDown, Andrade Cien Almas is going to be debuting next weekend.
In London, I think?
Or next week, yeah, in London.
Yeah, I like that.
Very much looking forward to it. Rock, if this dude, Wade Keller said this on So-Called Podcast as well, if this dude wins Money in the Bank, I'm fine with it. Like, I am that high on this kid already.
Remember when we did our fantasy booking for Mania next year?
Yep.
Who did I have winning the men's Money in the Bank? Andrade Cien Almas. I'm totally all right with that. Yeah, he's improved so much.
Yeah.
I think after they paired him with
Zelina Vega.
Zelina Vega in NXT, I think that's where he finally started to show who he truly is and a phenomenal performer in the ring. And that kind of got lost in the entire shuffle when they first brought him into NXT.
Yeah. Well, and he's also learning to work without a mask too.
Yes.
Like he was La Sombra in CMLL.
Yes.
And
the
like
founder of Los Ingobernables.
It's tough. L.I.J.
No,
Los Ingobernables de Japón.
No, well,
just Los Ingobernables.
De Japón, you know.
De Japón is
Japanese variant.
But I'm so looking forward to that.
Me too.
One thing I want to say before we get out of here, because this was a tough week for WWE, and this was very much like, if you notice, there's been a lot less WWE over the last couple of weeks. Normally, for the week after a pay-per-view, we do that pay-per-view, then we do a segment of Raw, we do a segment of SmackDown. It is not by accident that this has all been compiled into one now.
Mm.
And one thing I do want to say is that as wrestling fans, we get very upset a lot about things.
Oh, you don't say.
you especially.
And me too.
Support what you like. And that's, I think, kind of like...
Totally.
I'm not saying you have to go out and buy a bunch of shirts because not everyone is in the financial situation to do that.
No.
But if you are, go out and support the wrestlers you like, whether it be at RCW last night or CWE coming up in a little bit or PWA last weekend. Go out and don't just stream the things, like actually buy them. Show the places that you like what they're doing is working and what they're doing is appreciated.
Definitely.
Because this week, WWE puts on one of the worst weeks of wrestling we've seen. There have been some positives, but there was a lot more negatives.
Yeah.
And their stock price went through the roof because of certain business things going on with the UFC and the ESPN Plus deal and stuff like that. And that, to me, is rewarding bad behavior.
Yes.
And so what my thing is...
Your mantra.
Is go out and support what you like.
Yeah.
If it's Ring of Honor, go out and get Honor Club. Go out and buy some the Funko Pops of the Young Bucks.
And if
go
it's
out
and
buy a Ricochet shirt. Buy a Rusev Day
shirt.
Totally.
And if it's New Japan, get New Japan World. You and we have it. I got it a little while ago. I love it. I love the fact that I can actually watch something that I enjoy. And you mentioned support. I love supporting things that I'm like, I have a vested interest in something like that. I never thought I'd ever say that.
Totally.
As an adult wrestling fan, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, but and like, if Lucha's your thing, CMLL AAA are on are on YouTube. They put shows up. CMLL has like 3 shows a week up on YouTube. Yeah. One of them's all in Spanish, and it's really tough. But my point is, because this week, the things that always get me, and I mentioned this before, during the Samoa Joe-Roman Reigns match, it was, let's go Roman, Roman sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, you're just focusing on what you're not liking. Focus on what you do like. Instead of, let's go Roman, Roman sucks, go, let's go Roman, let's go Joe. Support the guy you want to support instead of just, because then all Vince hears is people talking about Roman Reigns. It's just a reaction to Roman Reigns. If you have people talking about the dude Roman Reigns is facing and the guy who you actually want to move on in this company, that might start to ring a little bit louder.
And that's what I'm saying with the whole Rusev thing. Rusev Day is a thing.
Right.
And it, like I said, it's the third most over thing that WWE has.
Yeah.
And I hope, I really hope that they capitalize on it, but I don't think they will because, again, we mentioned at the top, his match against Daniel Bryan, fantastic, but they are treating him like a heel, you know?
And now they're, but they are starting to utilize him more.
So,
and this comes off of the Rusev Day shirts being the hottest seller at WrestleMania weekend.
And the Rusev Day calendar, which sold out.
Yeah, exactly. And now, like, Lana's coming back into the fold.
Yeah.
And it's getting bigger and bigger reactions. As weird as it is, and as much as it may not seem like it, they do pay attention sometimes to what we're saying. And so instead of just saying,
us as fans, not us as the show.
No one listens to us at all.
Absolutely not.
But instead of going out there and being like, oh, this sucks, go out and get the Finn Balor shirt because they look at merch sales.
That's one of the biggest things that they use to really pump up a performer.
Support the wrestling that you like because there is a lot of great stuff out there. And we're going to try to focus more on some of the better stuff out there instead of just WWE each and every week.
I want to get to the point where I want to almost be like a, not even a reporter, but like an expert when it comes to New Japan.
Yeah.
Like I've been watching New Japan so I mentioned how angry I was. Like I had to spend some of my rare free time watching Backlash.
Yeah.
To kind of cleanse my palate. I walked to my library. I had a few bevies.
Nice.
Novels.
Novels.
A few novels. After that, walked back home and, cleanse the palate by watching some more Dontaku because there were some things that I totally missed, like the Will Ospreay it was the Will Ospreay match, him against Kushida.
Yeah,
oh my god, that's a match of the year contender. Totally forgot that, like how good that match was because I was so focused on other things. That was a match of the year contender, and now the fallout with Okada and Kenny Omega, like that was fantastic. So yes, I love New Japan, and there are some things that they don't do right, which I'm like, I would question that for sure.
Yeah.
And I'll call them out. Well, totally. I'm not going to call them out, but like I'll talk about it. Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, this is our platform and nobody listens to our platform except for us. Support. I like that message, you know, support what you like, because I come across as a guy who hates everything WWE does, and that's fine. I have my opinions.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's okay. You and I, we get into heated arguments about it, and that's fine as well. But as a wrestling fan, I have an outlet where I can watch something fantastic, in my opinion. Something that is better to a certain degree of a product than WWE, and that's New Japan. You know?
And you go out and support that. So that's what I'm saying. On that note, when we come back, great pro wrestling is coming to Calgary May 24th as CWE is back in town for their 9-year anniversary. We'll start our coverage with Danny Duggan when we come back to Combat Central on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Combat Central continues with G Rana and Peter Klein on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Canadian Wrestling's Elite is coming back to Calgary May 24th at the Marlboro Community Association, and the man who is bringing us that show, who is a friend of the program, analyst at times, but we're happy we haven't been able to use him as an analyst for a while, because that means he's been out there working. It is Danny Duggan joining us on the program right now. Danny, how are you today?
I'm doing well. We've kicked off the CWE 9th anniversary tour. Things are rocking and rolling, and it's going to be a fun 25 days on the road, and we're very excited to be coming to Calgary in a couple weeks.
You guys just don't do anything small, hey? 25 days this time. Like, before it was 21. It's like, okay, that seems probably long enough. Oh, no, 25? Okay, fine. Go for it. You guys, did you just hate home? Like, what is it that makes you want to go for a month across Canada?
Well, my girlfriend's going to start to think I don't like her very much for the amount of time I spend at home compared to being on the road. But wrestling's red hot right now, and being somebody who's been in the business 15 years and has been in the business during lulls where things are a little bit slower, with it being red hot right now, we're going to capitalize on it. We're going to build this brand and get the most out of it. So with Canadian wrestling being as hot as it is, wrestling around the world in general, we're making the most of it, and we're getting into new markets, and we're exposing CWE to as many wrestling fans as possible. And they're right there with us. That's why we keep on growing. People keep on coming out in bigger numbers, so we just keep on adding to that schedule.
Yeah, I guess if the people are coming out, then, I mean, who are you to ignore them, right? Mm-hmm. So we're definitely glad you guys are coming out May 24th. And that's one thing that I've noticed in the, year and a half we've been doing this show now. Because, like, we kind of knew independent pro wrestling was pretty hot. I didn't realize how hot it was here in Canada and here in Calgary. But it seems like things are really taking off this side of the border as well.
It most definitely is. And that's a big part of why we do these tours and the length of them and things of that nature, just because Canadian wrestling's always been a bit of a challenge just due to the economics of it. When you look at how far everything is spaced out and just the expense of bringing talent to Canada, whether it be flights and accommodations and things of that nature, we don't have the same luxuries a lot of the major U.S. markets have, where you see a lot of these hot indie shows. So we had to come up with a business plan and a game plan that was logical to bring top-tier professional wrestling across the country of Canada, because for a long time, a lot of the organizations were just running with a local crew, and when you're running with a local crew, you're going to maximize your results very quickly. You need those fresh faces, you need those experienced talents to come in, and you need those headlining talents to come in to build your brand. So luckily we've been able to do that. When you look at the 9th anniversary tour, we've got a headlining act in Ron Simmons, who's a bona fide wrestling superstar and Hall of Famer. And then when you run down the lineup, we've got wrestlers from across Canada, the United States. We've got wrestlers coming from as far as England. So Canada's become a hot destination spot for professional wrestling, and it just keeps on getting hotter.
You mentioned there Ron Simmons. Some know him as Farouk, hopefully the APA Farouk, not the weird gladiator thing.
Yeah.
How does that relationship come about? Is that a contact that you have before? Does he reach out to you? How does that relationship come together?
Well, we first had Ron Simmons in CWE this past February for our Legends of Wrestling 2 convention. And we had spoken a few times over the last year about him coming up to Canada and doing a tour, but he truthfully declined each and every time because the schedule kind of, I think, I don't want to say intimidate him, but didn't interest him at this point, in his life, being, at the age he's at and putting the miles on the road he has over his career and being retired now. But I just kept on him, and I wanted to get Ron Simmons up here. I think he's a major player in the history of professional wrestling, and he's a major celebrity in professional wrestling. And finally, I think he kind of gave in, and after building that relationship after many phone calls and many no on his behalf, he finally said yes, and we had to the Legends of Wrestling convention. And I've told this to a few people now. When I went to the hotel to meet our 6 or 7 headlining guests who I'd never met before, I had an hour to spare, and I went and said hi to Ron Simmons first, and I ended up spending my entire hour in his room just because his knowledge was incredible, his stories were hilarious, and he was just a good all-around guy to be around and talking professional wrestling with. And then when he was on the event itself, fans couldn't say anything but great things about their interactions with Ron at the meet and greet. And then for the event itself, he sat at the curtain and watched all 3 hours of the event, pulled each match aside and gave each wrestler, some critiques and some advice on their performances. That's ultimately why we bring guys like Ron Simmons, to Canadian Wrestling's Elite. Of course, we bring him for his star power to build our brand and get people in the building, but we're also trying to build our own stars. So having guys like Ron Simmons and last tour having great minds like Jake Roberts on the road with us, you can see the progression in the wrestlers getting better match by match and month by month. And it's been showing as the brand continues to grow.
Yeah, we hear about that from guys who wrestled back in the territory days, the valuable information that the veterans can have. And I mean, that must be a wealth of knowledge he can provide. So that must be just an incredible learning experience for guys, not only having him there, but also on the car rides with him across this country.
Yeah, you say you learn wrestling in the cars and bars, and that truly is, a true cliche. And for a long time, indie wrestling had a stigma, at least for the talent that was in it. And a big part of it wasn't their fault, because when you're wrestling, once a week or once a month, and you're wrestling with guys on the same level as you and who have traveled to the same places or lack thereof as you, you're only going to get good as your surroundings. And when you look back, when wrestling was at its hottest in the 80s and 90s, even some of the worst wrestlers, per se, were a heck of a lot better than some of the ones today because they were in the car every single day. They were in the ring every single day, and they were perfecting their craft. So it's one thing to have Ron Simmons here for one show, give some guys some advice. They never see him again. And it's another thing to have him here night after night giving advice and then getting to see guys apply it and then fine-tuning it and then going back in the ring the next day and doing it again and continue on 25 days over an entire month. By the time those 25 days are done, you're a much better wrestler than you were when you started, regardless if you've been wrestling 1 year or 15 years.
I want to ask about different styles of matches, because we heard, again, back in the territory days, back in the day, different territories had different styles. Because you're covering so much ground in this country, do you have to mix up the styles a little bit? Like, does the crowd in, say, Gladstone want a different match than the one in Calgary, than in Medicine Hat, than out in BC? Like, did you have to kind of mix things up a little bit, or is it a more general audience now?
That's a tough question. Generally speaking, I want to say good wrestling works everywhere, and I've always been a believer of that as a professional wrestler, not just a promoter. I believe that a good story and good emotion is going to connect with an audience, whether it be in Canada, in Glasgow, in Medicine Hat, or over in Japan. Like, I don't change my wrestling style based on where I am. I'm Hotshot Danny Duggan through and through, and that always seems to work. Generally speaking, the Canadian wrestling audience has always been a very big connector with traditional old school professional wrestling. And that style still is very prevalent and very popular and works very well today when we tour Canada. But with that being said, some of the major markets like Calgary and Winnipeg that have other wrestling organizations or that have had frequent local wrestling on a weekly or monthly basis for decades, they're a little spoiled and they've seen a little bit more. So you might have to turn up the dial a little bit, give them something a little bit different because they've seen so much. But with Canadian wrestling's elite, we don't have a style. When you look at the card from top to bottom, it isn't a one-note wrestling show. You're going to see your big heavyweights who throw down and brawl, and you can see your high flyers. You're going to see a little bit of hardcore. You're going to see your cruiserweights. So there's a little bit of something for everybody. You're not going to see the same match twice on a CWE show, and that's something we really pride ourselves on.
It's kind of just a throwaway thing at the beginning when I asked how are you, but getting to more personally with you now, how are you? Because this has been quite the stretch you've been on. You tear the muscle, I believe, the pectoral muscle, and then you take a pretty good knock to the head that was gushing blood for like a month. How are you doing right now?
Well, as of today, I'm doing much better. I had a punctured artery that should have been a lot less messy than it was, but they just kept diagnosing the recovery process improperly and stitching it up improperly. So I had it in the back of my head, and they were sewing and stitching up this cut too close to the surface. So a hematoma was developing underneath it. And then there was a giant goose egg on the back of my head that would then explode and the artery would start squirting out again. So finally, after my 50 ER visit, they realized what was going on after finally listening to me and sewed it up and tied it up at the source in the bottom of my scalp and were able to tie it up. So I haven't bled in a couple weeks. So in that regard, I'm doing much better, but I lost a lot of blood over 2 weeks. So the energy levels are still extremely low, and I'm very exhausted, even just having this phone conversation, because a lot of simple tasks take a lot more energy than they should due to the lack of red blood cells.
Well, we are very exhausting to deal with as well. As we chat with Danny Duggan here on Combat Central on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, ahead of their show up in Marlboro on May 24th here in Calgary. I'm Peter Klein. He is G Rana.
Danny, it's G here. So going back to that whole injury thing, Peach actually showed me the picture of when he tore your pec. It almost looked like a Samoan tattoo. And I it was just like, wow, how is the healing right now? Like, are you good to go or?
Yeah. In terms of the pectoral muscle and the bicep, I'm completely healed. I'm back in the gym. With that being said, I've been very mindful that I was, pushing very hard. So I haven't pushed heavy in the sense of doing presses or heavy presses in the very least in the gym. And I've had a new training program tailored to kind of protect that injured spot so it doesn't flare up again and possibly tear again. So I've had to do some adjustments in terms of how I train physically, preparing for wrestling and how I wrestle just to ensure that. And, a big part you talk about, the punctured artery and the torn muscle, and it just seems like things are adding up. And truthfully, I'm my own problem for that, because I like to get in the ring long before I probably should and need to take a little more time to heal and recover. So I'm trying to be more mindful of that, because as you get older, the body doesn't heal as quickly, but that urge to get in the ring when you got a hot house like Calgary and it's a sellout, you want to get in the ring and go.
Yeah, definitely. And I like that mentality, you know, kind of just knowing what you are capable of and kind of playing to that. Now, you being a wrestler, obviously, you're a wrestling fan. What are you watching these days? I mean, at the start of the program, you talked about wrestling being hot now. So, I mean, aside from, you know, everything that you're experiencing on the indies, what are you watching?
Truth be told, I don't have a lot of time to watch regular wrestling on a regular basis. So I tried to make time to watch the big shows, and I really enjoyed WrestleMania this year. I thought it was one of the best they've had in years, if not ever. New Japan, when I have the opportunity to watch, it's always a positive. They're really killing it over there right now. So in terms of what I watch when I have the opportunity to watch, I would say New Japan Pro Wrestling is probably my first priority and my first choice. And then I try to watch the major WWE shows because the talent they have there right now in terms of in-ring capabilities is the best it's ever been, probably in the history of the company. So you can't go wrong with just about any card they put on television or on pay-per-view.
For sure. And you mentioned New Japan right there. So at the previous event that they had, Dontaku, they announced Kenny Omega versus Okada for the fourth time now. It's going to be a no limit draw. I mean, in 2 out of 3 falls. Are you excited for this?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't delivered a stinker yet, and I don't think they're ever going to. So in terms of, you know, a wrestling classic, it's destined to be one. So I'm very excited to see how they put it together because it is a very interesting concept in terms of the, you know, the multiple falls and things of that nature. And curious to see the outcome because a lot of people say, well, you know, Kenny has to win this one. He's got to be able to slay this dragon if he's going to take the next level. But at the same time, Okada is, you know, becoming a legend. Well, he is a legend in Japan for his historic reign as champion, and this very well could solidify that and really develop him as the man moving forward for the next generation.
Now, Pete and I, we've discussed this ad nauseum almost. Okada and Tanahashi, I mean, they just went at it at Dontaku. And, you know, Pete kind of compared it to John Cena versus Randy Orton. We've seen it a bunch of times. But what they do is something absolutely incredible. Just those two. And I've mentioned it to Pete before. I think Tanahashi will go down as one of the best top 5 babyfaces throughout wrestling. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I agree 100%. And when you talk about, you know, those guys wrestling each other as many times as they have, you know, something that people often criticize WWE about is you often see the same matches over and over again, whether it be on Raw or pay-per-view and things of that nature. But when you look at two guys like that, I think why they're as great as they are, and I've said this about Kata many times, is you never get the same match twice with him. And I think he's highly underrated for his capabilities of bringing the best out of everybody he works with. Now, when you watch Kenny Omega's, you know, arguably, if not the best wrestler in the world, but Kenny's so good when he's in the ring with somebody, you could tell it's the Kenny Omega show. It's good because Kenny is in there. Okada's so good at adjusting to whoever he's working and getting a different match out of them and adjusting to their style to maximize their potential. I think he's probably the best wrestler in the world right now.
Tough to argue with that, yeah, for sure. As we chat with Danny Duggan here, a couple more for the man running CWE, bringing it back to Calgary May 24th. You just want to double back to the injury one more time with the pectoral muscle. You talk about changing up your training. Do you have to change up anything in the ring? Like, I can't imagine we're going to see a 450 from you at any point. But like, no offense. Do we see a change in style though from you because of that injury?
In terms of the torn pectoral muscle and the torn bicep, I haven't had to adjust too much. I've been more mindful of how hard I'm throwing clotheslines and things of that nature, and that's probably, you know, part of why it tore, because when I get in the ring, I'm going to hit you, and I'm going to hit you hard, and sometimes that could have consequence. More so, I'm actually needing to adjust, you know, from this recent punctured artery, because just from the Monday to Thursday, that wasn't even including the blood loss in the States. I lost 5 blood transfusions worth of blood over 4
Jeez.
Days, and they put 2 blood transfusions worth back in me. So my levels aren't right where they used to be or anywhere near it. So like I said, everything's very exhausting and very tiring. And with it being the start of the tour the other day, that was my first time being in the ring since that injury. And what was, should have been an easy match in terms of cardio conditioning for me was very tough. I exhausted very easy. I got very faint. I got lightheaded. I actually thought I was going to faint in the ring, which would have been disastrous. So just getting adjusted to that is going to be a change. I'm going to have to change my style in terms of the tempo I keep, leaving my feet and getting back up a certain way. I'm going to have to definitely alter it until that cardio conditioning comes back or my blood levels get back to a level that has me firing on all cylinders.
Now, you're in charge there. I don't think I'm breaking any news here. Has there been any, and I think I know the answer to this, but I want to ask anyway. Have you given any thought to doing the old grizzled vet thing? Like, hey, you guys got two bumps. Use them wisely. Let's get out there. Like, have you given any thought to just going old school grizzled vet on these guys?
Well, the thing is, if I had that mentality, I probably wouldn't be in the position I'm in now where I
that's
do
fair.
Think
yeah.
I am. And that's a part of the problem is I'm very passionate and I love getting the ring and I love getting in there and going. And when you see these CWE tours and you look at the talent that's coming, like I mentioned, we got wrestlers culminating from around the world, literally from around the world on these tours that are coming in to perform. And yeah, as someone who loves wrestling as much as I do, you want to get in the ring and you want to go full tilt with these guys. You want to see what they're made of and you want to give the paying audience the best match you can. And yeah, you could phone it in and truth be told, I believe I'm a smart enough wrestler where I could phone it in where the fans probably wouldn't even notice. But as somebody who's been the front runner of this company for 9 years and getting it to where it is today, I feel like if I'm not giving them 100% and giving them the best version of me, then they're not getting their money's worth when they buy that ticket. So you're always going to see me go out there 100% and give full tilt, whether I'm at 100% physically or not.
So aside from you not turning into Hulk Hogan and aside from you potentially fainting in the ring as well, what can people expect May 24th up in Marlboro?
We got a stacked card, and that's why we like coming to Calgary, because Calgary is, you know, one of the city centers of Canadian wrestling. And we have a touring group that goes with us on tour because Calgary's got such a deep talent pool as well. It's one of the stops on tour where we get to incorporate some of the top local talent. So we're really excited about that event. You know, having to miss the last one, I'm excited to come on back. I personally will be teaming with CWE champion Tyler Colton, and we will be battling the man who tore that pectoral muscle, the Canadian Crusher, AJ Sanchez. And in his corner will be the debuting 6'10" giant from England, Charlie Winston. And on the outside of the ring, enforcing the rules will be Ron Simmons, who's no stranger to throwing down when things get a little physical.
Oh, okay. So you're the small guy in the match then. So you are going to be the quick high flyer then.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Like when I started wrestling at 15 years old, I was 140, 150 pounds. I'm now 255. And I've always worked my entire career to be the big guy. And even now as the big guy, I still find myself on the small guy in the ring most times with all the monsters that have become to CWE lately.
I got to say, like you would know this better than I, but I think there's something real special with that Tyler Colton. Like I watching him at the last show, especially, I think you guys got something real good with that one.
Yeah, and it's a really cool story when you look at Tyler Colton. He was actually in the front row of the very first CWE show 9 years ago. He got a flyer going to a WWE event for our first show that was headlined by Mentolo and Daniel Bryan. Came down, watched the show, and fell in love with the CWE product. And as soon as we opened a wrestling school that year, he was the first guy to sign up, trained with the company, and has gone on to be the leader of the company 9 years later. So it's been really cool to see. And on top of him being a CWE champion, he's also a national strongman champion. So he's a very well-versed athlete. He's incorporated both of them into his wrestling. And I think the sky's the limit for him. He just got back from WXW in Germany. And being a 275-pound strongman, your options are limitless when you talk the world of professional wrestling.
And it really feels like the future is limitless for CWE. You guys keep rolling and are rolling into town again May 24th. For people who are looking to get tickets to this event, how can they do that?
The easy way to do that, whether you have a credit card or even as simple as a debit card now, you can go on CWETickets.com, purchase your tickets there directly. They'll be emailed directly to you to print off or show on your smartphone at the door. Or go to CWECanada.ca, and we've got multiple ticket outlets throughout the city listed there.
Awesome stuff, man. Really looking forward to it. You guys always deliver. It's one of my favorite times of year when you guys pass through. So best of luck. And for the love of God, stay safe out there, okay?
And I hate to break it to you, but we are bringing Tasty Travis specifically to Calgary. Oh. But he will be in the building as well.
Oh, Pete's going
to
love that.
I just spent 20 minutes being really nice to you, and now you go and do that to me.
I'm going to be in the crowd now and just booing Pete the entire time.
We'll be wrestling Matt Hart of the Hart family, so hopefully there's a sharpshooter in the future of Tasty Travis at Calgary.
Oh, if there is a God. All right, Dan, well, we end on a sour note, but thank you for doing this, and I guess I'll still come say hi on the 24th.
Very much look forward to seeing you guys.
Talk about a day ruiner, hey? Like, things are going so well.
Yeah.
And we're bringing him.
I even said it, and you can listen to it at the tail end of that interview. I'm going to be in the crowd, and yeah. I'm going to boo the living hell out of you. Like, if something happens, I'm going to be the first one who, like, just jumps up and, like, yes, destroy him. Because that's who I am. That's how good friends we are.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. So you're going to... Me there?
We'll see.
We'll see?
I'm going to move some things around.
Okay.
Yeah. You know me, man. I'm a busy guy.
Yeah, so. You are a busy guy. So looking forward to your support.
Yes.
May 24th.
My involvement.
At the Marlboro Community Hall. This is at 636 Marlboro Way in the Northeast. Time for us to take a break here on the show. When we come back, we go from one indie wrestling star to another as we have part two of our conversation with Colt Cabana coming up next on Combat Central on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Colt Cabana, boom, boom.
Combat Cabana, Central continues boom, with G. Rana Cabana, and Peter Klein on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Straight out of the shy, Mr. Shake and Bake, 45. Wrestling.
We are into the final part of the show here today. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about the program, send them my way on Twitter. I am at Primetime Klein. I'm looking to do a few more different things with this program, so let us know what you think. Again, send the tweets my way at Primetime Klein on Twitter. I'm not at Instagram as well. I don't know why you would want to follow me there, but last week we heard part one of our conversation with Colt Cabana talking about Ring of Honor and their War of the Worlds tour that is going down right now. Last night they were in Toronto. They're continuing throughout the United States. Still no Calgary dates, but we'll work on that. Coming up here in part two of the conversation, we'll listen to some of the influences of Colt Cabana as well as some Calgary connections he's had. This is part two of our conversation with Colt Cabana.
As for your participation in the company now, you're announcer with Ring of Honor as the color commentator. The transition to an announcer, you mentioned before you are wrestling all over the world on a weekly basis. Was that your call to go to the announce booth with this company?
I mean, not necessarily. I think the reality was Carino got signed with the WWE. Nigel got signed with the WWE. They didn't have a color commentator. I was wrestling full-time with Ring of Honor. And I think it was 15th anniversary. They didn't have a match for me. And so it was just like, oh, well, we want to make Colt part of it. Colt's been part of the promotion for so long. We'll throw him on commentary. And I think I just gelled so well with Kevin and Ian. And there wasn't anybody in mind for that commentary spot. That it just kind of naturally just transitioned right on over. And I'm not upset about it. I really enjoy it. I really like working with Ian. I think Ian is so talented. And I think he's such a fun throwback to the Gordon Sullys, you know, of that era. Just the kind of like just nerdy guy who just really knows all the technicalities about professional wrestling. And I enjoy it. As long as I still get to get in the ring. I toured DDT in Japan. I just got back from China. I'm all over, I'll wrestle in Cleveland's AIW and AAW in Chicago. And I'm just, I'm all over the world, which is my lifestyle, which I like. So it's almost kind of a nice break to go to Ring of Honor and do color commentary.
Do you see yourself being back in a Ring of Honor ring at any point?
Well, last year on this very tour, War of the Worlds in Chicago, I wrestled Yano, and that was such a fun match to have. And a couple of months before that in Columbus, we had an injury, and so I filled in and I tagged with Kenny King. So, never say never. I'm pretty sure every now and then I really do see myself in this weird Jerry Lawler role where, every now and then Jerry would come on WWF television and wrestle, but he would always be out in the indies. He's still out on the indies wrestling. And I'm not upset with that. I just, I'd like to get my Letterman moment, maybe, if I could have one request.
I don't think my show is big enough for that, but we'll see what we can do.
I'll come over and slap you.
Now, your time in Ring of Honor before, I mean, we talked about it before, a number of great and talented wrestlers came through that company, yourself included in that, of course. I want to talk about a couple guys that you did work with. Bryan Danielson, current day Daniel Bryan, someone you had a memorable match with. You go 60 minutes. First of all, I've never been in a 60-minute match and likely will never be in one. What's it like preparing for a match like that, and what was it like working with Bryan Danielson?
Well, I'll throw a quick plug out. I made a documentary with Bryan back in 2009, and it was put out in 2011. It's called The Wrestling Road Diaries, and it's available at my website, coltmerch.com or digitalcolt.com if you want to watch the MP4 of it. And you can learn everything you want about him at that age. I think he was probably 27 or 28 at that point, and he was just going into the WWE. This was his last tour. So it's a real interesting look at the independence on that scene. I did wrestle him for 60 minutes. And that was a time where he was doing four or five 60-minute matches
he was the champion. He was just looking to do something different. And that's always the great thing about Brian was he's just always thinking differently. How can we do something different? How can I change this up? How can I make myself different? I always thought when he called himself Mr. Small Package and was using the small package as a finishing maneuver, that it really summed up Brian, where he wasn't just kind of, going by the motions. Like, there's always something different. And I remember he wrestled Nigel McGuinness the night before in Minnesota to 60 minutes. And then we were in Chicago where we wrestled to, I think it was 59 minutes, 58 seconds or something like that. And there was a treadmill in the locker room. And when we got to the back, he was on the treadmill jogging. And I was on the floor just gasping for air. I was just dead to the world. And for him, it was just like another day of cardio. And I think that says a lot about Brian.
What was it like seeing him make his comeback here last month?
Yeah, special. It's weird because Brian was always off and on about wrestling. And there was a point where he was just like, and we talked about this in the movie too, where he was going to stop and go to the Peace Corps. And he had all, for years, he was one of these guys who was like, I don't want wrestling to define me. I'm going to go do something else. And he would always just get pulled back by wrestling. And so I think, you know, maybe these were his years to kind of, you know, to step away a little bit, but you could tell that he really, really wanted to be pulled back and it's really in his heart. And so it was nice to see that everything cleared out for him. And also it shows what a fighter he is, because I think any other wrestler, maybe a lot of other wrestlers, would have just been like, well, I guess my time is done. And he was pretty stubborn in terms of not letting, I guess, that injury or those injuries define him and finding a way to come back. And he did. And it says a lot about his character.
A pretty key moment in Ring of Honor history was the Summer of Punk. There's a DVD about it. You're obviously someone who's rather close with CM Punk, teaming with him and wrestling with him during this stretch, the Summer of Punk. As someone who was close with him, what was it like seeing that process and that summer play out?
Yeah, I guess it was all kind of documented in the WWE DVD, and that was also another cool part of Ring of Honor. They had tons of cool parts of Ring of Honor, and also at that time, you know, that was a lot of his influence, a lot of his direction, and I think that was the great thing about Gabe Sapolsky, and it is the same thing about Delirious now, too, is just how much we have or we had of our own say in things to move them forward, and he did, you know, he kind of mapped out his own strategy. And I think, you know, I was able to do the same thing with Jimmy Jacobs and Nigel and Homicide. And you see a lot of the guys today kind of, especially the Bullet Club and being the Elite. And these guys are kind of mapping out their own way. And it's not like some big creative force is saying absolutely not. They're all moving together to move forward.
You mentioned the Young Bucks with the Being the Elite, and you've produced a couple documentaries. You have one of the bigger podcasts in pro wrestling right now. Looking at the way people are starting to use social media and things of that nature, you were kind of one of the first guys to go out and do that. Do you see any influence in what people are using now to what you did with the documentaries and still the podcast?
Yeah, and, you know, every time the Young Bucks have a nice article in Sports Illustrated or ESPN, they always kind of give me a shout-out saying that, you know, I led the way and I paved the way for them. And there was times where you know, my line would be bigger than the Young Bucks lines at the merch table, which is crazy to think now because I did a tour with them in Australia and that thing just didn't stop. It was unreal. And so, yeah, you know, I think it's nice to kind of be a leader in that sense and to help a lot of the guys, and especially, you know, with the company that we started, Pro Wrestling Tees, has allowed a lot of people to subsidize their independent wrestling money and, you know, do this full time because they can have money coming in with t-shirts. And that was always the thing for me is, so, you know, I had been released by the WWE and I didn't want to do a regular job. Like, I didn't want a 9-to-5. And so I was going to find any way keep wrestling as my main income. And, you know, we only wrestled on Friday and Saturday as independent wrestlers, a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so there was a couple other days to do stuff. And so in my head, it was like, I have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday and Thursday to get stuff done, to work, while a lot of wrestlers, and I've seen it over the years, cause I've been a full-time independent wrestler since 2003. They would just sit around and do nothing.
And, you know, I have a pretty good work ethic. And so I just didn't want to sit around and do nothing. I wanted to create content. I wanted to work. I wanted to work. And so that's what I did.
With Pro Wrestling Tees, that's something that's taken off massively. The website, there's an actual brick and mortar store now. You're seeing those shirts in like non WWE shirts in Hot Topic. Was that something you thought could really take off the way it did?
Well, when Ryan from 1 Hour Tees approached me to do this, I thought it would be successful, but not in the way that it is today. And a lot of that, if most of the credit goes to Ryan, for being such an unbelievable businessman and strategizer and just being cool. Like, he's just cool. And, you know, I have a business degree, and I've seen people in the business world, and I'm just so turned off by people who use the smart words and, you know, use the strategies and try to play it the way that they see in the textbooks or whatever it is. And he's just very down to earth, very laid back, and just wants to make sure he's doing right by everybody. And I think that was kind of the key. So the idea of wrestlers not having, I mean, that was the idea in the beginning, is wrestlers didn't want to buy stock. They didn't want to stock up because they didn't want to spend the money. And so we would spend the money for them to buy the shirts in the first place. That idea I knew was great. The length that it came, I definitely didn't expect it to happen.
Now, doing some research on you, a couple of promotions that you've worked with have caught my eye. So I want to ask you about a couple of them now. What was working with Wrestling Society X like? Because as someone who watched it, it seemed insane.
Who was I telling the other day? I was telling somebody that Wrestling Society X was on the 10 spot on MTV, which was in 2006, which was the very cool thing. It was following Viva La Bam, who was Bam Margera, and that was like right off the steps of Jackass being cool. So, like, I was setting up in my head bar appearances during the week. The same thing I just said to you, like, during the weekend we'll wrestle, but during the week, like, how can we make money? Well, if we became famous off this show, I wanted to make sure that we could set up bar appearances just like the MTV guys did, just like The Miz, you know, the Real World, the Road Worlds guys, the Road Rules guys. So, we were all hoping. I mean, I never like banked on it becoming the next big pop culture thing, but it was on MTV at 10 o'clock, an amazing time slot. And a lot of these people were becoming very famous off of MTV at the time. So it was kind of a hope. In terms of the tapings, it was so much fun. I mean, it was basically, I think it was maybe 7 or 8 days in Hollywood, California. And, you know, just a lot of great talent just sitting there at a sound studio wrestling in front of a paid audience and with some of the best wrestlers in the world. And again, it was a lot of these unsigned top talents, a lot of the underground wrestlers. And I've got so many different weird, cool stories just like this that it's just fun to, this was another fun thing to be a part of it. When you look back in 30 years, you're like, oh yeah, I was once on this weird MTV show that totally failed, but kind of cool that I was a part of.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating little blip in pro wrestling history. And like you mentioned, like, it's not just like bums who went through there. There are some legitimately, much as yourself, legitimately talented guys who are with that company that it's kind of really funny to look back on.
Yeah, and I know like Kevin Kleinrock, who was basically the guy behind it, tried to get like some kind of 10-year reunion thing going or try to get some press by it, but it really passed by. I think a couple years ago was the 10-year mark for Wrestling Society X. But yeah, you know, I remember when I was training, my trainers, Danny Dominion and Ace Steele, were part of a promotion called WXO, which was filmed in Florida, and it was on television for like, I'd say 5 weeks. And, you know, I remember it. Not a lot of people remember it, but, you know, for the real wrestling nerds, like, those are the fun things to talk about, the ones that were kind of very short lived. And that WXO was, Jimmy Hart, I think, was a part of it, and Stan Lane and Ted DiBiase. And there's always going to be these people trying to make something happen when they're out of the WWE or when WCW folds. There's always going to be these things, and I really like being a part of them.
Another promotion, it had some momentum a couple years ago with the time travel angle. Chikara is a promotion that you've spent some time with. What's it like working with them? Because that's another one that seems a little bit off the wall.
And I'll be wrestling for them again. It's been almost 5 years, June 9th in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. If
anyone's going to be out there. I'm going to be part of the Johnny Kidd Memorial Tournament. I think the world of Mike Quackenbush, and a lot of people have different thoughts and opinions on him, and I think that's what makes for an interesting person in wrestling. You know, if everyone loved somebody, how fun would that be? Or if everyone hated somebody, how fun would that be? But I love the idea that you can have these conversations with different people about their different likes and dislikes. And I think the world of Mike. I think he's very smart. I think he's a genius in his own way. I think he's a wonderful talker, a brilliant talker, if you will. And I really like being a part of his promotion just for the idea of his mind and the way his mind thinks. And I think that's what's fun about wrestling, is different people's minds and different people thinking different ways. I really do think wrestling is subjective. There's not just one way. And I think that's the key. When people tell you, no, this is the right thing, there is no right thing. It's art, and it's beautiful, and you can do it however you want to do it.
Amen to that, for sure. Another company that you've worked for, the proud former champion of Juggalo Championship Wrestling, run by the Insane Clown Posse. What's the atmosphere like when you go do shows for those guys?
Yeah, and sadly, this year, the Gathering of the Juggalos runs on a Ring of Honor television taping. So this is my second year in a row that I won't be at the Gathering of the Juggalos, which makes me very sad. I've done it 6 years in a row previously. And I think the world of them. I'm so inspired by Violent J and Shaggy 2 Dope. And you don't have to like their music, but you should appreciate the idea that they're on their own label. They made their own label. They've been making money, if not millions of dollars, for 20 plus years, which is super incredible. And it's all self-made. They're self-made men. And for that, you have to appreciate that. And I love that they love wrestling. And they just do what they want. They do the things that they like to do. They want to put on a giant carnival in the middle of the summer, so they do it. They want to have wrestling involved in it, so they do it. And they do. And I got to be a part of it for a long time. They don't run as much, but I think it was the summer of 2010 or 2011. They were doing biweekly shows in Detroit, and these kind of small shows in Detroit. And, again, it was every other Wednesday, and that gave me an opportunity to, you know, because I'd just been fired by WWE, so, like, I wasn't sure if I could do it full-time, but they were giving me biweekly checks on a weekday, and it just gave me a lot of confidence knowing that I could be a wrestler. I didn't have to get a full-time job, and that was – I'll always be grateful for them for those gigs and keeping me working. In the early years before my podcast kind of really hit the world and became a hit, and I think from there, that's when everything kind of changed for me. But the Insane Clown Posse were definitely, I'm definitely grateful for everything that they've done. And Juggalo Championship Wrestling is very fun.
It seems like it would be a blast. We've talked about a few different types of promotions now that you have worked with, both serious styles of wrestling, hardcore styles, Juggalos, a number of different types of things. And it really feels like now, along with everything else in the world, there are hot debates about what actually makes money in pro wrestling and those types of things. As someone who has been tied to so many different types of pro wrestling, what do you feel about the ongoing discourse around pro wrestling these days?
What do you mean?
With the... I guess I'm thinking a couple years ago with the Will Ospreay Ricochet thing, and then you see a couple months ago with the Young Bucks, and they do the five different drop kicks, or the five drop kicks at the same time, and people, adults watch this and stuff like that, and it feels like there's a lot of infighting in pro wrestling. It feels like there's a lot of judging from the outside. I guess I just want to know, what's your thought on how people are perceiving pro wrestling in 2018?
Oh, well, I mean, I think anything that's drawing attention and making people watch or having, like, I guess Joey Ryan would be a good example of this. But Joey Ryan has had so many people, for everybody who goes, that's dumb, that's why I don't like wrestling. It also has so many people being like, oh, I've never seen wrestling before. I just thought it was giant steroid dudes wrestling each other, and I didn't know it was this weird or eclectic. And then people would go and see, you know, even like the LGBTQ community, to see what Joey and Candace did or what Joey does for intergender wrestling, and to be like, I just thought of something different. And now I'm kind of interested. So, it's always going to be like that. And guys like Will Ospreay and Ricochet, again, I think people have this perception of just what wrestling is, this giant arena wrestling. And to then go and watch Ricochet and Ospreay do something, do that sequence that they did, it'll turn some people off, but it'll also blow a lot of people's minds and be like, wow, maybe I should check out wrestling. You know, I do this wrestling promotion in Denver called Lucha Libre and Laughs, and it's very much a hipster venue. It's a pro wrestling match and then a stand-up comic, and then a pro wrestling match and a stand-up comic. And the stand-up comics are also doing they're doing live commentary over the matches to the house. And it's just local people drinking cheap PBRs, having a good time out. And so, like, when I go there so many times, I just hear people going, like, I didn't like wrestling. I guess I love wrestling now. And I think that's the attitude that I take when it comes to these different things or obscure things or weird clips and GIFs and memes that are out there on the internet. I guess any publicity is good publicity, except if you're that one guy that we don't name who's been erased from wrestling history.
Yeah, exactly. With the podcast, you mentioned it a few times. That's been a very big thing for you in your career, along with the documentaries. But with the podcast, you've kind of changed the format of it now. What was the thinking behind that?
Yeah, you know, for 7.5 years, basically, I sat down with my friends in the locker room, and we talked about kind of our struggles about being a professional wrestler and, the struggles to make it and the different stories. And it's essentially, I don't know, I think it was played out. I think I talked to everybody I've talked to. I think a lot of people are doing that same kind of format, that these ideas of just, interviewing everybody. And it was time to make a change. And, you know, in 2010, when I started it, no wrestler was talking to other wrestlers like that. That wasn't a thing. And so now my taste of what I enjoy in podcasts has changed a little bit too. And when I started again, you know, that's what I liked about podcasts. And now, you know, I've changed a little. So now I'm kind of doing, like, people have said it's kind of like NPR-ish. It's kind of a docu-style. It's just I'm recording and I'm putting in inner bumpers and I'm narrating it. It's kind of a post-produced podcast about my week in wrestling. And but it's while I'm on the road. So, you know, just this week, the episode you're going to hear, or that's already out already, was about my trip to Florida. And we talked to Cody Rhodes, and I talked to Jay Lethal, and Lanny Poffo was there. And, you know, the first couple ones was a tour of Japan and a tour of China and WrestleCon. And you just kind of get to hear that experience through myself and through the other wrestlers and the other people just involved in the world of wrestling firsthand. And so it's very much like the Wrestling Road Diaries, but a weekly documentary. And I've gotten such great feedback from it. And it's really helped me move forward and helped me continue this style of podcasting, which I'm enjoying. And not to say I wasn't enjoying the style before, but it almost became a chore a little bit. And now this has kind of given me a little bit of a new lease on life and a new lease on podcasting, which really makes me happy.
Was there any concern going away from a format that had worked very well for you for a while?
No, I just think I was kind of done, to be honest. So okay. I think my options were just stop it or give this a shot. So that's very powerful where, there wasn't much pressure. You know, the two options was stop or do this. So, I'm stopping would have just stopped everything. So this is kind of what I'm giving a shot. So, you know, if it tanks, I'm not worried about it. But so far, everything's been really nice, and the numbers have kind of stayed where they're at. And from that, you know, I hope they move up with people talking about the new style.
Now, you mentioned before you've traveled all over the world. You continue to travel all over the world. This is a show based in Canada and here in Calgary. Any memories of working up here in Canada, and maybe even a couple from Calgary?
Oh, God. I did a tour with Danny Duggan, and I remember wrestling in Calgary. There's a video up that I think I put up. I believe it was in Calgary where I took this lady's cell phone. And she was in the front row, and she was just sitting on her phone texting while I was wrestling, which is something I'll do a lot now. I'll go in phases. I used to pick up kids a lot and march them around the ring, and now I seem to be taking people's cell phones while they wrestle. But I think a lot of my memories, you know, when I think about Calgary, I think have to do with TJ and Tyson Kidd and Harry and Natty. And, they were the people that I hung out with when I was in the developmental system. And I would just hear these stories. And it was just always kind of nice and cool to hear about the stories of the hearts and all that stuff.
So there you go. The conclusion of our interview with Colt Cabana. Definitely check him out online. Definitely check out his podcast, one of the more influential podcasts in the pro wrestling business today. So a huge thank you to Ring of Honor and to Colt Cabana for setting that one up. That's going to do it for the program today. As we've talked about before, we're kind of week to week on this show with Stanley Cup playoff things, although it's looking like we're going to be good the rest of the way, and we got a lot to talk about in the coming days, weeks, months, as we lead toward the UFC on Fox that is coming to Calgary, as we lead toward WWE Money in the Bank. We heard from Danny Duggan earlier in the show. We got a CWE card coming up there. It was RCW again in the city last night, putting on a fantastic show up in Marlboro. Was happy to check that one out. So once again, thank you to everyone for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.